to be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy.
Hello, my name is Gail Moskowitz, and you are listening to Mental Health Matters. I am a licensed clinical social worker, and I have been privileged to practice in the Richmond community for 31 years. Mental Health Matters is a program dedicated to issues pertaining to mental health, interpersonal relations, addiction, sex and sexuality, and discussing healthy ways in which to live a more thoughtful and emotionally honest and fulfilling life. Each week on Mental Health Matters, I introduce and discuss a topic after which you, the audience, have an opportunity to ask questions or weigh in on the subject. Mental Health Matters comes to you every Monday at 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM. You can also listen to the program in real time by logging on to WRIR's website, www.rir.org. The show will be available for you to listen to by this evening, along with all of the past shows, by logging onto my website. In order to get a copy of my website or link to my website, all you need to do is email me at yourmentalhealthmatters. That's the letters U-R, mental health matters, all one word, at gmail.com. Also, feel free to send me your comments, questions, or suggestions for a future show. The number at which you can reach us today is 804-649-9737. 649-9737. My guest today is Rana Saunders. She is a licensed clinical social worker and has been the director of the Center for Behavioral Change for 30 years. Ronnie is among the first therapists to embrace the use of cognitive behavioral therapy. This is a practical form of psychotherapy, the aim of which is to solve problems concerning dysfunctional emotions, behaviors, and thoughts. There is very good research to support the effectiveness of cognitive behavioral therapy for the treatment of a variety of problems, including mood, anxiety, personality, eating disorders, substance abuse, and believe it or not, psychotic disorders as well. Clients are helped through a specific technique-driven, brief, direct, and time-limited treatment. Ronnie, welcome to Mental Health Matters.
Well, thank you, Gail.
I am thrilled today to be highlighting the issue of obsessive-compulsive disorder. Obsessive-compulsive disorder today, it is so infiltrated in our popular vernacular. I hear people say, oh, she's so obsessive, or she's so compulsive, or she's so, other words that we're not going to use today. And I think it is important to clarify what we are really talking about. So can we get started by, maybe you can clarify for us and define exactly what is obsessive-compulsive disorder?
Okay, well, let's maybe take an example. Let's imagine that your mind got stuck and a certain thought or image kept playing over and over and over again. No matter what you did, you try to get rid of it. It's an uncomfortable thought. It's something you don't want to really be thinking about. And then along with that thought comes this incredible kind of anxiety. And, you know, our natural impulse is to protect ourselves from anxiety. So you want to do something. And often that, you know, even though you might recognize that fear doesn't make any sense, you still feel that very intense anxiety and you need to do something. And that's where the actual behavior comes in. So let's say you had a thought that you might harm someone and you want to... or you look at a knife and you say, oh, I might stab my child. Now, that's a horrific thought, and it keeps playing and playing in your mind, and you can't get rid of it, and you think, oh, it's the matter of me. And so you begin to avoid the knife, you know, and try to get away from the knife, and the behavior becomes really locked in. So you do everything you can not to be around that knife. That's
like
an example.
Stop cooking,
like, yes, get other people to do things for you, whatever.
Okay. So... You know, we think about obsessive compulsive disorder, again, in the greater culture. We think about things like this profound hoarding that people have, or people who wash their hands 4,000 times a day till their skin is raw. And then we also kind of use obsessive compulsive disorder to define, you know, kids who are good at school and study hard. Oh, she's so obsessive or whatever. And those are the extremes. And I want to know what it really looks like in most people. How does it manifest itself? And before you answer, I just want to say today, if you'd like to speak to Ronnie about obsessive-compulsive disorder, the number is 649-9737, and you're listening to Mental Health Matters.
Well, I think one of the important things is to understand when someone actually has the disorder, that it is an extreme. It is not just, I mean, we all have little rituals and ways we do things, but this is way to the extreme. I think it's probably easier to talk about something like, for instance, a fear of contamination. That's a pretty common one. Someone who might be afraid of germs. And so in their minds, they might see something that they consider dirty, whatever that may be. It's not usually dirt.
Tell me what it might be.
Blood.
Blood.
Let's say.
Okay.
And so there's this, the obsessional thought is, oh my God, something bad is going to happen if I touch this. I might get sick. I might get my children sick, whatever. So in order to deal with that terrible anxiety, I'm going to wash my hands. I'm going to wash anything that I think came in contact with that blood. And it takes over a person's life, and I think that's where the line is drawn. You know, when it really starts interfering with.
So there might be somebody who might leave a public bathroom and kind of be, oh, I don't want to touch the door handle. And
yes.
Then they kind of let go of it and move on, and they're fine. And that wouldn't really be obsessive compulsive disorder, but somebody who would recreate, who would make their whole day look different.
And
rather,
who wouldn't even go into that public restroom in the first place.
So they wouldn't go out, they wouldn't go to a public place. Is that something they might do?
Or they spend a lot of time figuring out how to get around it. And they're so hypervigilant too, always looking around to see, ooh, is that blood?
That sounds exhausting. Ronnie, we have a caller. Welcome to Mental Health Matters. This is Gail Moskowitz. Do you have a question? Caller. Okay. Perhaps the caller will get us later. We'll get back to it. Okay. All right. So it sounds exhausting, Ronnie. And
it is exhausting. And when you think about anxiety, you know, any kind of, it's hard for people who don't have this disorder to realize how intense that anxiety is.
Now, one of the things that I think about when I think about obsessive-compulsive disorder are people who can't walk out of the house in the morning because they have 5 billion rituals before they can walk out of the house in the morning. Is that something you commonly see?
Yes, it's very common. And I can tell you just an example. Years ago, a woman I worked with who was a very high executive in her company, and she had a fear of fire. And she had to check all her appliances and everything. It took her a couple hours to leave the house. And the first time she came to my office, she had this big briefcase with her, and she said, "You won't believe what I have in here." And I said, "What?" And she said, "My iron. It's the only way I know. I didn't, you know, I unplugged it, even if she hadn't used it." And just to think about how much, you know, when she would come home at night, I mean, there was no way she was going to go out again because she had to go through all this ritual of checking.
So when you say checking, it's people who check to make sure the stove is off, the iron is unplugged, their hair appliances. Those are the appliances you mean. The caller is called back. So,
okay.
Caller, you're on the air. This is Gail Moskowitz. What can we do for you today?
Hi, Gail. Thanks. I love your show. I'm calling because
Thank you. I hope you're not the only one.
I'm calling. I was diagnosed with OCD about 15 years ago, and I now have a 12-year-old child, and he's exhibited some OCD-like symptoms, and specifically with protruding thoughts that have been bothersome to him. This was several years ago. We've sort of worked through some of that, and I've never, you know, gone the route of medication. And I'm just kind of curious with him, that is. I'm curious at what point, because so much of it is internal and hard to see on the outside, at what point do you get someone else involved with a child that you're concerned about? Or because of my disorder, am I just sort of seeing it everywhere?
Great question, caller. Thank you for calling. How about if you hang up and let Ronnie answer your question on the air?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things, since you have personal experience with this, that you probably are much more aware than a lot of other people might be. But, you know, I don't think it's ever too early, particularly because sometimes it does run in families, and so there's more likelihood that it might be an issue for him because you experienced this issue. And I think it would be really helpful to really work on the behavioral piece of it, and really, and this is, I guess we'll get into talking about how to treat it. And I can certainly understand your reluctance to consider medication for a child. So it probably would be helpful to do some of this behavioral kind of thing.
So you're saying that for this woman that called in, that she has a pretty good idea of the things she's done to manage her OCD, and clearly she sounded like she knew what she was doing, that it would be helpful to teach some of those techniques to her son. Is that what you're
exactly,
saying?
Exactly.
So would she teach them, or would she bring her son in to
Well, I think she could. I think certainly she could try herself, for sure. You know, if, again, she has had this kind of therapy herself, I think she would understand the process. And sometimes it's hard, however, it helps to have sort of the neutral third party, because sometimes mom is just...
Right, right. It's hard to push around your 12-year-old.
Yes,
right.
Exactly.
So another thought that I have about obsessive compulsive disorder, it makes me remember this gentleman I dated for a while. And boy, I don't like to remember those gentlemen I dated for a while. But this one in particular, he was a lovely man. He had some very bad quirks. And one of them was that he could not go on to read today's paper until he read yesterday's paper, but he generally would get weeks behind in reading his papers and magazines. So he would have them laid out in his living room in piles, and I have to tell you, he had years of them because he could never get back there. Now, he would read the headlines so he could keep abreast of what was going on. So, oh my. But here's the question. If I would say to him, gentleman, his name was Gil, actually. He doesn't live here. I can say his name. I'd say, Gil, that's like crazy. He would say, no, it's not. Makes more perfect sense to me. He didn't feel any anxiety about it. He didn't understand my problem.
Well, that's the, you know, with quote, hoarding kinds of examples, which this would sort of be, in that situation, the person usually feels that what they are doing, that there's a good reason for it. Well, in all OCD it does, in a sense, but a lot of times people will say, I know this is ridiculous, but I have to do this. And
but he didn't think it was ridiculous. Is that
right.
Obsessive compulsive disorder, if
well,
you don't think it's ridiculous?
It's, I mean, as far as the actual hoarding variety of OCD and why it's so difficult to treat, because the person really doesn't see it's a problem. With most of the OCD that we treat, even though people feel compelled that they have to do this behavior, there's a piece of them that knows it's ridiculous. I know this doesn't make any sense. I had a young man, and this was really interesting, who was actually a PhD student in psychology at a university outside of Richmond, but close by. And he didn't want to go to his own department to deal with it. He had a strong ritual about how he had to get dressed every day and how he had to button his shirt. And if he didn't do it that way, his obsessional thought was, something bad is going to happen to my family. There's usually some sort of feared consequence here. And he said to me, I know, this is absolutely ridiculous. And so we're beginning to work, and he says, and he pauses, and he said, but why take the chance?
Well, that's an interesting thing, because how do you explain to somebody that if they touch the doorknob in a public bathroom, they're not going to die? I mean, let's face it, they're germy.
Right, and that's what we call sort of the kernel of truth. It's not that things don't happen, but again, what is the likelihood, for instance? And so that's part of how we treat. You know, we need to, what we call exposure and response prevention, and why it's very difficult. I think people who seek treatment for their OCD are really very brave, because it's very, very hard work.
Tell me how somebody would be treated for OCD.
So, for instance, what we're doing is basically trying to rewire the brain, and we have to expose the person to the situation, to the person with the fear of the blood, for instance.
How do you do that?
Well, there are, you know, going to places like going to a hospital or going to an emergency room or whatever, because those are places that the person would avoid. And what we do is teach then anxiety management techniques while the person is in the situation. They then see that there's something they can do to pull the anxiety down, and they also see that nothing terrible happens. But it's very hard. And we don't start with the most difficult things. We get people to kind of make a list of all their situations and start with the least hard of the hard and work our way up. And then it gives, and what we're doing is really changing the circuitry in the brain and helping them rewire, because really it's almost like they've got a glitch in their brain.
So tell me how you do that. What do you say to them to manage their anxiety while they're facing this anxiety-ridden situation?
Well, we have lots of education involved with this. A lot of it has to do with, first of all, they have to be willing to buy into the fact, label it, this is my OCD, and my job there is to get through this feeling without doing my ritual. And a lot of times it's distraction. You know, if you're not focused on that awful fear thought, that anxiety will come down. It might not go away, but it comes down.
And they can manage that. They can label it. They can number it. They can be mindful of these techniques in any situation. Is this what you teach them?
Yes, yes. And it goes across situations, and some, of course, are much more difficult. And some people don't have compulsive rituals. Some people just have obsessional thoughts, and that's even harder to interrupt.
I think, is that called a cognitive loop?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, again, but they're just worry thoughts with no actual behavior associated with them.
So what are they using to manage the anxiety?
So we're doing the very same thing, except it's a little bit harder because it's all in their heads. It's not a concrete visual behavior.
So give me an example of what one of those thoughts might be.
It could be anything, but it could be a concern. Well, a lot of times religious obsessions.
Well, let me ask you this, Ronnie. Sometimes we've all had the experience of going to sleep at night and having one of the problems of the day stuck in our mind, and it goes over and over mm-hmm. And over again in our mind. And I often say to my clients, let's practice thought stopping, just to say, I'm not going to think this. This is not a helpful thought. I'm not going to think it anymore, so that they can learn to move away from the thought that's making them anxious and realize they don't have to keep thinking that thought
right.
in order to ward off the anxiety. Is that the kind of thinking you're talking about, or is it more bizarre than that?
Well, usually it's more bizarre than that, but the thought, you know, I always laugh about what counting sheep. I mean, that's a distraction. You know, if you're not thinking the thought, if you can occupy your brain cells with something else,
If you have a question for Ronnie, please call us at 649-9737, 649-9737. This is Mental Health Matters, and I'm talking to Ronnie Saunders today about obsessive compulsive disorder. I didn't mean to interrupt. Please finish, Ronnie.
I forgot where I was.
You were telling me about the obsessive thoughts and how wild those thoughts might be.
Yes, they can be very extreme, but I think, again, the person has to be willing to label it. You know, this is my obsessional thinking, and my job is to distract myself.
Do you think that all of us have a little bit of this?
Well, I say, like being a little bit pregnant. I mean, yes, we do have, you know, we all have get stuck on things occasionally, but it's nothing to this kind of degree.
And when people come to you and they are literally, some of them can't live their lives. I mean, they're incapable of functioning. They're stuck at home.
Yes, but it's not always that severe. And I think a lot of times, and what I get concerned about, I know I'm grateful that there are a lot of shows on TV now about OCD, but a lot of times they're talking about very extreme cases. And so then I think a lot of people say, well, mine's not so bad. Maybe I really don't need to get help. Maybe I really don't need to do anything about it. A lot of people function very well, but it takes an extreme, you know, amount of energy to function. And so they may be great at work, and as soon as they get home, everything falls apart.
You know, I once had this client who had diabetes, and she was a juvenile diabetic, and she was a particularly pretty woman. And she came to me because she had severe eating disorders. But she had severe eating disorders because she'd sort of grown up with this very rigid diet. But as we began to talk, it really became clear to me that the worst problem that she had was this OCD. And it would take her 2 hours to get out of the house in the morning because her makeup had to be perfect, her dress had to be perfect, her hair had to be perfect. She'd wash her hair again if it didn't come out properly. And it was just, I mean, it was really heartbreaking to watch the exhaustion of her life, but we really did work on these techniques, and she got better. And I was wondering, it sounded a little bit like your executive you were talking about. Did she get better?
Yes, she did, but it was very difficult.
She stopped bringing her iron in.
Yes, but you know, in some of it, people say, "Well, is it because of some kind of trauma? You know,
What causes it?"
When what we do know is that it is an issue of brain chemistry. It has nothing to do with how you were toilet trained or what happened when you were three or whatever. It's almost the messages are not getting properly from one part of the brain to the other.
No, I want you to finish telling me about that in a second, but let's get this caller first. I'm Gail Moskowitz. This is Mental Health Matters. You're on the air. Do you have a question for Ronnie Saunders?
I do. If I'm getting help and doing behavioral therapy and things like that, what do you do for your spouse? How does your spouse handle it? How should they handle your compulsions? Do they tell you to shut up and move on? How do you get your spouse or your significant other or someone that you're living with to help you help yourself?
Well, now, first of all, your spouse should not be telling you to shut up. But that's a whole other show. Okay, good question. So how can your spouse support you in this effort is what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and I think a lot of times, it's a great question, I'm glad you asked it. A lot of times family members try to help. They don't know what to do. They're so frustrated. They don't understand it. You know, they just say, well, just stop. And obviously that's not so easy. So part of the thing has to do with educating them, giving them something to read. A great book that I often recommend to people is called Brain Lock, and it really explains the whole process and the whole way that the whole kind of therapy that we use. I think if you can get a family member to read that, family members can't collude with you. A lot of times family members will say, oh, I'll just do it for you. It takes too long to get out of the house. I'll do it for you. That does not help at all.
Okay. The name of the book is Brain Lock. Who wrote
that
book?
Yes, Jeffrey Schwartz.
Okay, I'll put that on my website for you.
It's a great resource, and it's...
It's a great resource.
Yes, yes, it really is.
Caller, did that help?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. I will put that on my website along with some information about the OCD.
It's the OC Foundation.
The OC Foundation. I'll put all that information out there as well. Now, finish telling us about how you get this. You were saying that it's brain chemistry. So nothing in your childhood or how
nothing.
You're brought up?
No, but I have sort of a little theory of my own in terms of what form the symptoms take. I think it has to do with something in your environment, something that you have been exposed to. And I call people with OCD sometimes have what I call Velcro brain. You know, you're set up to have this disorder, and then something in your environment and locks right on. I mean, for instance, someone who is afraid of germs maybe had worked in a medical setting, and somehow whenever the OCD took place, hit, and that's what that person became afraid of.
I have an interesting question for you, and then we're going to have to start to wrap up, but Ronnie, is there an association with obsessive compulsive disorder and phobia?
It's sort of like the opposite end of the coin, and I'm always saying that with phobic people, we're trying to get them to do things that they don't want to do, like driving or whatever, and with the obsessive compulsive person, we're trying to get them to stop doing something that they're doing too much.
Right. Well, that makes sense. It'll be interesting. You'll come back and talk to us about phobias, because that's like they're the people who have phobic thinking are some of the most fun people to spend time with and treat, even though I know they have difficult disorders.
The other thing, I think even people with OCD need to be able to laugh about it. Some I have a group therapy. I do group therapy, and we do laugh. And I think you have to, because, again, the person with OCD knows it really doesn't make sense.
You know what, Ronnie? I'll make sure I put the number on my website. You can reach Ronnie Saunders at 270-4111, 270-4111. She does group and individual therapy. She's been doing this for 30 years. She is the best. Please feel free to call her. Thank you so much for coming, Ronnie.
Oh, thank you, Gail, for addressing this important topic.
It is an important topic. It really is. And I hope that you'll come back again and talk about some, perhaps phobia, maybe the eating disorders. This is Gail Moskowitz. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters. You can get in touch with me by emailing me at mentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. If you have any questions or thoughts, I'll be happy to make sure you get a link to my website, and you can see the information that we talked about today and get some information about obsessive compulsive disorder, Ronnie's number, or if you have any thoughts for future shows. Next week, we're going to talk about imago therapy, a wonderful way for couples to learn to talk to each other and actually learn to listen. Thank you for listening to Mental Health Matters. This is Gail Moskowitz, and see you next Monday at 1 o'clock.
To be happy in every life, we have some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry, be happy, don't worry, be happy now. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy.